time, day or night, because all of our shows, which are here on Tuesday, 10 to 11 a.m., every week, are also archived. And that's one of the great things about Progressive Radio Network. And we have so many classes and workshops coming up. If you go to naturalnurse.com under calendar, you will see that this very week we have our spring season Chinatown Herb Walk Tour, and that's on ground. That's where you come and hang out with us in person, and it's in New York City. It's this weekend. Did you always want to explore Chinatown, but you didn't know where to go and what was reputable? Well, Dr. Zamperone and I have been doing our Chinatown Herb Walk for the last 31 years, believe it or not. And so what we do is we spend the day in Chinatown. We visit Chinese apothecaries. We do Qigong in the park. And we have a really special class where we go underground. It's pretty exciting. Every time I go, it's amazing to me, where we see herbs being made into FDA-approved herbal remedies. It's like an underground in Chinatown. So lots of wonderful things goes on there. It's like taking a trip to another country, and that is this coming Sunday. And if you miss it, we do have that tour twice a year. We also have an ongoing class, herbal certification course. That's coming up soon. That's online. And we have several on ground on Long Island, such as our edible and medicinal herb walk at Restoration Farm, which is a beautiful, giant, biodynamic, organic farm right on Long Island. We also have an online class called Thyroid Adrenal Pituitary, the Sacred Triune, and Uplifting the Happy Heart. That's coming up soon as well. Today we have a class also, which is an online class called The Scientific Validation of Botanical Medicine. It is completely free with a special section of the consciousness of plants. And all kinds of classes and workshops pretty much every single day. Just go to naturalnurse.com calendar if you'd like to find that schedule. And today, we're very happy to present our guest, our special guest, right here on Progressive Radio Network, and she is Dr. Lori Nadel. Dr. Nadel is a specialist in acute stress, trauma, and anxiety, and she's been interviewed in the New York Times, National Public Radio, Reuters, and CNN. For 20 years, she was involved in journalism, and she recognized a need to help people whose lives were shattered by violence. After earning two doctorates, she also pioneered emotional first aid tools to help lower acute stress after catastrophic events. She is a member of a critical incident stress management team working with first responders and staff who are at the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School during February of this past year, which, by the way, was right next door to my house, which was the Parkland event that unfortunately, you know, injured so many people and killed people as well. And Dr. Lori herself was unfortunately hit by Hurricane Sandy. And then she ran a long-time support group for survivors. She directed a program for teenagers whose fathers were killed at 9/11. And also, she wrote the script for After the Fall, the Rise of a 9/11 Community Center, which is narrated by Dan Rather. She's also a best-selling author. Her book, Sixth Sense, Unlocking Your Ultimate Mind Power, was featured twice on Oprah. And today we're going to talk about a lot of things, but also Dr. Lori Nadel's newest book, The Five Gifts, Discovering Hope, Healing, and Strength When Disaster Strikes. And you can find out more at her website, LoriNadel.com. That's L-A-U-R-E. R-I-E, Nadel.com. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Nadel.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Now, let's go back in time, because I know that you have a long history with Dan Rather, who is still very active in the news industry today and certainly is a household word.
Yes, I was a young writer, just hired by CBS News in 1980. I'd been working there pretty much full time as a per diem for 2 years, and I had, because of my own experiences as a journalist, I was very involved in human rights for journalists through the Overseas Press Club, and then started an organization with the executive editor of Columbia Journalism Review, who I'd written some stories for. We started an organization called the Committee to Protect Journalists, and I was able to persuade Dan and Walter Cronkite to join the board of directors of this fledgling organization. And Dan and I have stayed in touch since that time, 1979, 1980, and he's been my mentor and supporter, always encouraging me to write, for better or worse, and I'm very grateful to him. He's an inspiration.
And he certainly has been involved for so many years and is very supportive of you and your work, and wrote the foreword to your new book, The Five Gifts.
Yes, he did. He wrote a very generous foreword, which I'm kind of blown away and very, very grateful. Recently, he was in Florida to do an event and stayed an extra day, so that he interviewed me. Actually, it was a joint book signing at Barnes & Noble in Florida, and he's just been extremely supportive of my work, and also very supportive of this new book. And we're living in very turbulent times, and the book gives us some insight into how people in other cultures and other countries deal with turbulence and cycles of violence and natural disasters.
And that, of course, is a big topic that you discuss in your book, The Sixth Sense. You talk about other things, I would say more, psychic intuitiveness. But in this book, you're talking about dealing with, I would say, trauma and catastrophe. Is it always that with trauma, or is it sometimes just like an internal struggle rather than a thing like a hurricane that hit your house?
Well, we use the word trauma, to mean upsetting or disturbing. So, and I have to say that, not to be too flip about it, but trauma is not a bad hair day. So, if you have an upsetting argument, if you have an argument with your partner, you have an argument with your kid, and there's a lot of screaming and there's a lot of upheaval, we're likely to say, oh, that was so traumatic, I had this terrible argument. But trauma literally means life-threatening. It means that you either came close to, you witnessed, directly or indirectly, or somebody who experienced some sudden, violent, life-threatening event. So when I'm talking about, and the reason I try to stay away from the word trauma in the book is because trauma also encompasses things like assaults by somebody who you know, or sexual assault, when you're a child. And those are very important topics. But they're very complicated because they involve a relationship with someone, usually or very often somebody who you know. Whereas this book really talks about these kind of crazy, random, kind of accidental, seemingly accidental events that are now happening, according to experts, with greater frequency and intensity. And we don't have the mindset. And some would say we don't even have the attention span to develop the mindset to learn how to go through these events or come out of these events and keep our balance.
So that's an interesting thing you said. Of course, in my mind, the Earth is absolutely in an upheaval. I think it's pretty obvious. And yet, there's a lot of political division, it seems, where people are saying, no, nothing's happening. There's no climate change or anything like that. How is that possible?
Well, I think, we're seeing a lot of delusion. It's interesting. It's like the collective psyche now of this country, the society, is kind of cracking. The systems that are supposed to be there to support us in the event of you know, something cataclysmic. There were no systems of support. You know, the Red Cross comes for a few days. Maybe they have a program that lasts for a couple of months. There's no financial support in the system. You find out very quickly if you're the survivor of a natural catastrophe that you're going to get blamed, you're going to get attacked, you're going to get lied to. And I mention that because, you know, I've experienced the system at that level, but people who are actually running the system or running the government, you know, seem to share a collective delusion that, you know, everything is okay and we can just ignore the signs that, you know, that are all around us, that our relationship with the environment is out of balance. And that was a key message that I kept hearing over and over again from healers and from shamans who I had the good fortune to meet and to study with over the course of 10 years between 1994 and 2004. As you know, Ellen, I spent part of every year, you know, doing some kind of training or a one-on-one experience with shamans and healers, either in South America or from South America. And they all kept
saying
the same thing.
Wait a minute. Let's not scoot past that, because we do have a lot of time to discuss things today. Okay. And that is a very interesting adventure and very explorative in terms of yourself, which then led to your ability to use that kind of intuitive growth in your work. So why don't you talk a little bit about that adventure?
Well, I'm going to do that. I was just going to quickly tie it back to your question, and that the shamans kept telling me that you in the north, your relationship with nature is out of balance, and all of nature speaks, but you're not listening, and so nature is going to get louder and louder and angrier and angrier. And so, you know, to answer your previous question about how is it possible that so many people in positions of authority are denying that climate change exists, I think it's a reflection of the fact that as a society, our relationship with nature is out of balance. And so, as you were saying and mentioning, you know, through the years that I was fortunate enough to meet with and study and explore how shamans and indigenous healers view consciousness, I came to understand that there is an interrelationship between human beings, you know, our human nature, and, you know, Mother Nature, if you will, la naturaleza, as they call it in South America, and that we no longer pay attention to nature, but coming back into balance with ourselves means that we have to learn how to listen to how spirit communicates with us through nature. And that's a very important integral part of how I work with people one-on-one. The other piece that I wanted to mention in response to your question was that in the book I had the fortune of interviewing a gentleman named Cheokasin Ghost Horse, who is the host of First Voices Radio on Pacifica Network. And he said that Mother Earth has PTSD. I mean, we have beaten it into submission. We've extracted the resources. You know, we're starting to damage the actual under structure. The inner structure of the planet is being damaged by drilling and by fracking and by underground explosions in order to look for oil. And you know, we've done so much damage to Pachamama, as the people in South America call Mother Earth. We've done so much damage that the Earth is traumatized. And so we're traumatized, and we're constantly, you know, experiencing something called vicarious traumatization. Every time you turn on your device or your phone and you see the news that's right in front of you, you're looking at images of people who were going along in normal, and then suddenly their lives were shattered by a violent event. And so that's really true. The area that I focus on.
You know, it's really true, like you say. And the number of people who are basically used to live in a house, used to go to work, this is all across the world, although we're somewhat, you know, we're somewhat isolated from that now, except when we have a big, like what happened to you with the hurricane, which put you in that. But you see the people wandering the earth right now. I mean, right. Every day, a more and more huge number of the earth's population is literally homeless, living on the dirt and starving to death. And yeah, it's just ignored, it seems.
You know, we're very, we as a society, we're very, we really are myopic, and we've been myopic. I think I was always shocked when, I was shocked as a young woman when I started writing TV news. And, you know, read the Reuters Wire or Associated Press or United Press International, and you'd see, you know, stories of huge famines or, you know, cyclones and natural disasters. And, you know, I'd go running to my producer and they would say things like, yeah, we don't care. How many of them have televisions? They're not watching. Or, you know, that's not news. Famine in India isn't news. But one dead American anywhere in the world, and that's news. And that's kind of the, you know, it's changed significantly because with, you know, satellite technology and, you know, digital communications, we're now much more aware of what goes on all over the planet. And I think that even people who never had any consciousness whatsoever are kind of aware of how brutal life is for millions and millions of people all over the world. And we're experiencing, I think, you know, we as a species, I think are in a cycle of turbulence that could go, you know, basically it's going, you know, could go in one of two directions. And I don't think that the cycle is going to stop until it kind of runs its course. And we learn the karmic lessons as creatures, as a species, as souls who have come here. We've incarnated at this time in history. And I think that until we learn what our collective psyche needs to learn, this cycle is going to continue.
Yeah, and, you know, on a deeper spiritual level, and I know I can bring this up with you, many people are not familiar with some of the Eastern mystical teachings, such as the fact that we're in the time of the Kali Yuga. You know, that's like a time that was really designated for death and destruction, because Kali is actually the goddess of death and destruction. So not that it softens the occurrence, but it makes us hopeful that it's a cycle and that the cycle will end and perhaps the earth will see better times. But on a more practical level, I really wonder how it's possible for someone who runs, let's say, the EPA, who absolutely and measurably increased the earthquake activity in Oklahoma. Like, we know that happened, just like you said, because of the increase in fracking and increase in environmental interactions that we've done as humans. So to be able to look away and say we have nothing to do with it, people do that. But then, like what happened to you, it's really in your face, like
that's right.
Like you experienced personally with Sandy.
That's right. You know, I started working on this book, The Five Gifts. But at the time, I was calling it All of Nature Speaks, and it was going to be kind of a spiritual travelogue, you know, with interviews and you know, kind of quotes from shamans I had met along the way with these predictions about you know, how our relationship with nature was out of balance, and, you know, kind of looking a little bit more at mythology and what do we learn from these cycles of turbulence. And then nature spoke very loudly. I mean, I was like a few months into this project, and suddenly, you know, I had 4 feet of the intercoastal waterway in my living room. And as you know, I mean, I had a charming little beach cottage, but everything was on one floor, and 4 feet of water, that was chest high water, and I had to go up into the crawl space and watch the water kind of creep up the stairs. But because the storm surge was so strong, it destroyed the town's, the city, the city's sewage treatment plant, the sewer pump, the filter or the pump was broken in the storm surge. And so when the tide went out later that night after the brunt of the hurricane, everything in the town was contaminated. The water supply was contaminated. There was raw sewage all over everybody's house and the garden. People were told not to plant vegetables for a couple of years until the soil began to regenerate. I mean, it was really, it was an environmental catastrophe on top of a natural catastrophe. And then, the long-term damage after a natural catastrophe is socioeconomic because financially it's devastating, to most people. That's a whole other subject, but it's because, again, the system is broken and corrupt, and as we have a government that keeps appointing people into positions of authority who are also broken and corrupt, we're seeing a magnification of the breakdown of, so many aspects of the natural world, the relationship between man and the environment, as well as, the very system itself that's supposed to be respectful of the environment.
Yeah, I don't see that there's too much respect for the environment lately at all. I mean, and the environment, like, you can understand, because you understand, as you described earlier, Panchamama, it's not just this scientific, measurable something. It's actually a living entity that, has gone through phases in the past. Don't forget, as humans, we're certainly influencing it. I have no question about that. But it's not like these massive upheavals never, like what's going on even today in Hawaii with these unbelievable earthquakes. But this has happened before. That's how the Hawaiian Islands were built in the first place.
That's right. And I think, you're talking about the cycle of death and destruction. I really think that a lot of what we're seeing, kind of on an archetypal level, we're seeing the interplay of forces of light and forces of darkness, and that there has to be, throughout human history, as far as we know, that there have been these cycles where it just seems like, it's earthquake, it's volcano, it's storm, it's famine, it's warfare. It's just a very unstable and very turbulent cycle. And eventually these cycles do, work themselves out and they come to an end. But I believe that one of the lessons, and I talk about this in the Five Gifts, is to make us aware that, we don't get everything we want in this life, and we are living in a time where we're coming face to face with forces that are greater than we are. And, catastrophic events, something as horrible as Parkland or the Pulse nightclub shooting or the Columbine shooting or September 11th, that they make us aware that there are forces of evil as well as forces of good. And that, this suffering, if you will, has gone on, throughout time. And this is part of the teaching that we as souls have to go through for our own growth and gain. And I think that, when we try to find, or we look for meaning, or we look for, what can we learn from this as souls, as spiritual beings, then we can move through the horror of a catastrophe and acquire some kind of strength or some kind of resource that strengthens us.
And that's the important thing, because there's no question these things are going to be happening. And they're certainly happening, or so it seems they are happening, with a higher level of intensity. And as you pointed out, Dr. Lori, it could be that it just seems that way because we know much more, like right now what's going on, let's say, on the Israeli-Palestine border, where years ago without internet and all that, we might not know how horrible it is, how many people are starving all over the place, look what's going on in Yemen, et cetera, et cetera. Well, now we know that's going on, but it's still a matter of how do we deal with it, especially when it hits home like it did with you, really home, your house and your life.
That's right. One of the people who I interviewed for the book is a surgeon who he and his family recently moved back to Israel, and we kind of talked about like what kind of mindset do people have in a country like Israel, or somebody who escaped communist East Germany when he was 11 years old by swimming across a river while people were shooting at him. How do people who live in repressive regimes, how do people live in countries where the country is torn apart by war and violence, how do they keep their balance? And I think that, you know, in the case of Israel, a lot of it, in addition to their traditions, not just the religious traditions, but the families stay very close. The community, you know, is even though there's dissension within, you know, the Israeli society, but basically the society is committed to being there and serving in the military, and they're committed to the country's survival, and there's a unified sense that to live in Israel is to live in a society where there are going to be wars. He said it's not an if, it's a when. And so you kind of live in a state of readiness that it doesn't mean that you're being paranoid. It just means that, you know, you're as prepared as you possibly can be. And, you know, as parents, he was saying that, you know, he and his family, they try to teach children to focus on the good and not to look at, like, all Arabs are evil or all Palestinians are bad, but to really look for the good in people and to understand that not everybody is good and not everybody is peaceful. And, the first gift of humility, I think, helps us to understand that we don't control all life events. We don't control how other people think. And, things happen that are out of our control that can be, really horrendous. And that doesn't mean that we're a bad person, and with humility we can accept that life isn't as it should be, or it's not what we want, but it is what it is, and we have to do our best to be the best person we can to get through it, but without harming ourselves or other people.
Your book, The Five Gifts, helps people find a path. And we do need to take a break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And I want you to know that you are listening to Dr. Lori Nadel. We're talking about her book and her deep insights called The Five Gifts, Discovering Hope, Healing, and Strength When Disaster Strikes. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss Sar sarsaparilla, or Smilax officinalis.
Sar sarsaparilla is a tropical plant which grows in South America, Mexico, and Guatemala. Although most Americans are familiar with it as a flavor enhancer for root beer, it has also been used for its beneficial properties for hundreds of years by many different cultures. In Roman times, the young shoots were eaten, and the mature vines were worn as garlands at festivals of Bacchus. According to ancient Roman writings, Sar sarsaparilla originated when the beautiful maiden, Smilax, was turned into a shrub after her love was slighted by the young crocus.
Sar sarsaparilla was brought to Europe in the 16th century by Spanish traders. A French physician, Nicolas Monardus, published a comprehensive account of Sar sarsaparilla as a treatment for syphilis in 1574. During Portuguese military operations in 1812, a British inspector general of hospitals noted its positive effect on syphilis patients. It has also been used in China for treatment of the same condition. Sarsaparilla was included in the United States Pharmacopoeia until 1950 as a recommended treatment of secondary syphilis.
Sarsaparilla's medicinal action appears to be a result of binding bacterial endotoxins in the gut, thereby decreasing their absorption. This greatly reduces the stress on the liver and is likely responsible for its historic use as a tonic and blood purifier.
In a controlled study of 92 patients published in the New England Journal of Medicine in 1942, a chemically active component of sarsaparilla called sarsaponin greatly improved psoriasis in 62% of the patients and resulted in complete clearance in 18%. Sarsaparilla is often recommended by naturopathic physicians for gout, arthritis, and psoriasis. Another folkloric use for sarsaparilla is as a tonic for male sexual potency.
So, if you want a root beard flavored tea with a long history as a healthy tonic, reach for the sarsaparilla in your natural medicine chest.
Nadel, Lori Nadel, that's L-A-U-R-I-E, Nadel, N-A-D-E-L.com. Find her book basically anywhere so that you can discover hope, healing, and strength when disaster strikes. And thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Lori.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. You know, I loved that little kind of mini documentary about sarsaparilla. In one of the appendixes in the Sixth Sense, I have a homeopathic first aid kit for acute stress. I have a postdoctoral diploma in clinical homeopathy, which I studied to find natural, safe medicines for trauma and anxiety issues. Because, as you know, as probably so many people know or have learned the hard way, anxiety medicines are unsafe and they're addictive. And psychiatrists know this. Any kind of benzo, diazepam, Valium, Xanax, Klonopin, they can all be highly addictive and dangerous to withdraw from suddenly. So in the back of the book, in the appendix, you'll find over two dozen homeopathic medicines that will help you with specific types of anxiety reactions to everything from storms to feeling like you've been stabbed in the heart. There's also recommendations for a first aid kit, which includes homeopathic arnica for bruising, apis for swelling, cinchona for bloating, and you can find the whole list in the appendix of the five gifts.
Yes, this is an excellent thing to have the book for, if nothing else, although it has so much great information. It's actually called Homeopathic Remedies for Acute Stress, Safe, Natural, and Effective. And just like Dr. Lori shared with us, it's like a must-have. And I also am recommending to all of my patients and clients to get a homeopathic kit now. Because homeopathy is being, unfortunately, aggressively attacked by the FDA. And, of course, that is because who sits on the FDA are members of the pharmaceutical industry. And as more people learn about herbs and homeopathics, in terms of helping use them. And they're very, very cost effective, and they are not controlled by the pharmaceutical company. So therefore, since their use is growing, I believe they are becoming enough of a challenge financially to where they are now being aggressively attacked.
Oh, absolutely. The FDA, by the way, does approve homeopathic medicines and the manufacturing of them. And when I studied the course, I was taking the course, which is really developed for medical doctors, physicians, physiatrists, nurses, people in the medical profession. I was grandfathered in because I also did postdoctoral clinical training in mind-body medicine with Dr. Herbert Benson. And it was a privilege to be able to study with so many amazing doctors who are finding more. Thousands of doctors have taken this course. I think over 10,000 doctors have taken this course in the last 10 to 15 years, because more and more patients are asking for safe, natural medicines that don't have side effects. And when homeopathy came into this country in the late 1800s, what happened was people found that they could buy a medicine for just a few cents and it would get them better. And the pharmaceutical industry at that time decided that they weren't going to make any profit if people could get better with a short-acting medicine that was going to help bring their mind, body, and spirit back into balance. And so they started this campaign to attack homeopathic medicine, which was the primary form of medicine in this country at that time. And the allopathic branch of medicine, the American Medical Association, began attacking homeopathy and discrediting it. The pharmaceutical companies, such as they were, also kind of got into the act to discredit homeopathy as a branch of medicine. And so we ended up with, this kind of allopathic-dominated type of medicine that we have in this country now. And more and more and more people are getting sick from the side effects and the interactions, which the FDA never tests for, as you know, Ellen. I mean, we're kind of, we're almost like we're victims of the pharmaceutical industry. I mean, if you have a cough, they tell you have to take steroids. If anything you go to the doctor for, they're going to give you some kind of maintenance medication that you really don't need for the most part. And I'm not saying that people shouldn't take, thyroid medication or blood thinner medication, if you have a life-threatening condition. But, doctors are very quick to, as a friend puts it, diagnose and adios, and here, take this. And I hope your pharmaceutical plan will cover it, and come back in 2 weeks. And then you come back in 2 weeks and you've got a rash and you're bloating and you've got a headache and you're sick from the medication. And doctors don't want to listen to you. I mean, it's another type of crisis that we're having in this country that homeopathy offers a safe alternative to.
Absolutely. And it should be, aggressively promoted. It should be used even in Medicaid clinics, since they're so worried about cost. And it's very unfortunate. But nonetheless, we will move forward with sharing that information, as in your wonderful book, The Five Gifts, Discovering Hope, Healing, and Strength When Disaster Strikes. Now, let's delve into what are the five gifts.
The five gifts, which I called when as this book evolved, and after Hurricane Sandy, I kind of, it started to change, which a good book does. It changes organically as you're working on it, and it changes your life in ways you didn't know it was going. I'm just talking about writing the book, not even publishing the book. Writing a book changes you in ways that you didn't expect. Kind of takes over your life. And in the course of writing about the five gifts, I started to call them the five unbearable gifts. And this was a title that Buddhist monks loved and publishers hated, because publishers tend to be kind of very literal. And so I would get feedback like, well, if they're unbearable, then nobody will want them. And as I explain in the book, that's kind of the point, because we don't want these five gifts until we need them. Because the five gifts are humility, patience, empathy, forgiveness, and growth. is like, really? Do you really want those gifts? But when you need those gifts, when you have to recover, when you find yourself faced with recovering from, it can be anything from an auto accident, it could be a catastrophic illness or injury, it could be a natural catastrophe, it could be a random act of violence of some kind, which unfortunately happened more and more and more, as more and more people are weaponized. There seem to be more and more of these kinds of acts of violence against innocent people and civilians. And as I said, this is a turbulent cycle, and as these events are increasing in frequency and intensity, the five gifts will help us get through the long period of healing. Because anyone who's been through a catastrophic event learns the help cycle lasts 2 to 3 months, and then the cameras leave, and the story is no longer on your screen, and so people tend to think, oh, it must be over. But for people who have suffered a violent event, then the healing process is just beginning. It actually doesn't even start until after the first anniversary, and it takes 3 to 5 years to really get to a point where you can look back at that event and get some detachment from it, so you can see who you've become as a result of what you've learned from that event, and it doesn't dominate every waking second all the time. And to get through that long period of healing, which nobody expects is going to go on for that long, we need these five gifts, which are not values that are highly regarded in our society.
That's so true. Now, let's go into each of those, and perhaps, you know, I know you develop things like keys to emotional first aid to help with walking through some of these really wonderful gifts that someone might have to call forth if they are in this kind of situation.
Well, the first gift is humility. And humility is kind of, it shifts us from thinking, why me, to understanding that, you know, these things happen to other people as well, even though we go through them on some level, you know, alone, because, you know, it's happening to your body, or it's happening, you know, to your soul, or it's happening, you know, to your family or to your school or to your life. But humility, I think, it diffuses that sense of victimization. And as I said, it shifts us from why me to why not me. It helps us to surrender to events that are outside our control. So my favorite example of humility was a story that I did when I was a young news writer at CBS, and it was a story about a guy named Rocky who used to wheel himself around town on a little wooden dolly because he had no legs. His legs had been shot off in a poker game, which obviously is not something that most of us will ever have to deal with. And I'm laughing because Rocky was so cheerful that he attracted the attention of a reporter at a local television station who said, Rocky, how come you're so cheerful? And Rocky said, well, I was angry for the first year, and I kept asking God, why me, why me? And then one day I realized, why not me? I guess it had to happen to someone, and it happened to me. And once he had that kind of insight, that realization, Rocky decided that he would spend a couple of days a week wheeling himself up to the geriatric ward of a local hospital, and he taught little old ladies how to play poker. And to me, that's an amazing example of humility. It's like you take this event, you kind of take this horrible thing that you've been dealt, something that you didn't want, something that you didn't expect, and it kind of shatters your view of predictability and normalcy, which, as those of us who've studied Eastern religions know, that predictability and what we call normalcy are illusions anyway. But the sudden violence events can shatter our illusions of what we thought life was going to be. And so humility, you know, is what allows us to grasp that life is not what we thought it should be, and that we need the help of humility in order to just come to terms with that. The second gift is patience.
But wait, one second. Okay. We want to do patience, but we're going to have a little patience because we are going to take our break here. When we come back, we will continue our discussion with Dr. Lori Nadel, author of The Five Gifts, and we will begin talking about some of her recommendations for increasing patience, and so many people need that, including me and Dr. Lori, for instance. Yes. We're not the most patient people. So we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Progressive Radio Network. The Thinking Person Station.
With Vaccine Information Coalition, and our show is titled What in the Cell is Going On. We will be revealing how vaccine toxins damage our cells, how to allow the body to heal itself, and how to protect yourselves from the drug company's agenda. Join us every Monday at 2 p.m. on Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM, to learn all you need to set yourselves free from the medical, military, and industrial cartel.
This is Tharna Noor from the Real News Network. Our daily podcast is now on Progressive Radio Network, so tune in for the week's top stories and analysis. That's Wednesdays at 11 a.m. And for more info, head over to therealnews.com. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
To The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Visit us at naturalnurse.com. Click on calendar and you can join in either virtually or in person in the many classes and events that we have both online and on ground in your area. Also, we love to hear your comments. Almost 300,000 of you are downloading our podcast. We're so happy to have you on board. And we love to hear from you and what you're interested in. Today, our guest is Dr. Lori Nadel. We're talking about her book, The Five Gifts, with a foreword by Dan Rather, Discovering Hope, Healing, and Strength When Disaster Strikes. We're going to continue our conversation, but Dr. Lori, there's so many things in this book that are just immediately helpful. Like, I love your keys to emotional first aid.
No, emotional first aid is something, it's a term that I learned when I studied with the International Critical Incident Stress Foundation. We do pro bono work to provide peer support to first responders after calls that are particularly frustrating or disturbing. For example, you know, if a child gets injured or hurt, you know, over the 4th of July, very often they'll call in a debriefing team to go in, and emotional first aid are the kind of quick acting tools that can diffuse we call acute stress, which are the initial reactions to a sudden violent event that can include difficulty eating, difficulty sleeping, you know, a knot in your stomach, nausea that doesn't go away. It can go as far as palpitations, headaches, and emotionally it can be the feeling of terror, the feeling that the event could happen again, which is called hypervigilance, flashbacks, you know, all of those kinds of phenomena, which can come on right after an event, or it can also come on years later, in which case it becomes post-traumatic stress. So emotional first aid tools are very quick acting activities that I've developed over the years in working with people, and they're designed to immediately diffuse panic and take the edge off anxiety right before, for example, if you're in a tornado shelter or you're sheltering in place or you're at a shelter during a hurricane, if you are experiencing something, you know, as a result of a near miss or an accident, it takes the edge off that sense of that your life is hurtling out of control, and that sense of anxiety that is a natural, you know, it's a normal reaction to an abnormal situation. So these emotional first aid tools, which you can actually, you know, tear the page out and keep it in your pocket if you want, or take a picture of it and put it in your cell phone. And you can always have these five emotional first aid tools available so that you can take the edge off while when you're feeling panicked.
And they're so great. They're so easy. I love how you describe it. It's very specific, the one I'm looking at. How you stand, you reach your arms up, you look up, you breathe in, really takes the stress off. You don't have to think about, what should I do? It's just something to do when you're feeling frightened and overwhelmed.
Yes, you know, the body, you know, the body and the mind and the body are, you know, we're like a great, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, the bio-organism, you know, that you know, we inhabit as souls. It's really, really quite remarkable. And a lot of these exercises that I've developed, they kind of work with how the brain naturally processes information. Visual, auditory, or kinesthetic. And so when you're looking up, your mind, the cursor of your attention, which is literally your mind, goes up into the part of the brain that thinks visually, that thinks spatially. And when your attention is in the visual part of the mind, then it releases any uncomfortable feelings that you have, because you're no longer in the kinesthetic mode, which is emotion and feeling, which can be emotional feelings and also how those feelings get expressed in your physical body. So just something very simple like looking up or putting your arms out can actually kind of create a safety shield that neutralizes panic and anxiety.
Wow. That's a pretty interesting thing. I mean, it's an exact action that someone can take pretty easily. You talk about looking up also.
Well, you know, this is also great with kids that are crying. When you say, hey, look at that, look, and you point up. And as soon as the kid looks up, they'll stop crying for the same reason.
Really? I'm going to try that with my 2-year-old granddaughter. I never heard of that.
No, try it. It you know, it definitely works. Or think of your mind as a cursor. And just like you would swipe, you know, the cursor to the bottom of your screen, you know, take all of those anxious thoughts and the what-ifs. You know, anxiety is the disease of the what-ifs. You know, what if it happens again? Or those feelings that, you know, that you're unsafe, that your physical body is unsafe. And maybe you are in a dangerous situation where there are things going on around you. You know, I think about the, you know, people in Gaza or people in Syria right now, or the places where there are explosions going off all the time. And just the sudden explosive sound can cause, you know, your nervous system to go on high alert. But if you take all of those feelings and all of those thoughts and literally imagine that your mind is a cursor and swipe it down to the soles of your feet, and if you rub your feet on the ground and you rub your feet, you know, on the floor, and you imagine or you picture that you're looking at the world through the chakras on the soles of your feet, and the only thing you can hear is the sound that your feet make as they rub against the ground, and you just focus on what the soles of your feet feel like, then that will disconnect the app of anxiety that's going on in your head, and it'll calm you instantly. I mean, literally, this works within 10 seconds, because your feet cannot worry. Your feet cannot do anxiety. Your feet can only do feet things. And I have a free MP3. You don't even have to buy the book to get the MP3. If you go to mindbodynetwork.com and you scroll down the homepage, you'll see a picture of the book and a headshot, and you'll see a box where you can just enter your email address, and we will send you this MP3 for your phone that talks you through this feet exercise called, I call it Focus on Your Feet, because your feet cannot do anxiety. your feet can only do feet things. And when you get all of your attention, everything that's in your head, everything that's in your mind is focused on the soles of your feet. It literally clears your head like 1, 2, 3.
That's probably one of the reasons why it's great to practice something like meditation or yoga beforehand, so that you do have some of those skills.
Oh, absolutely. But the great thing about the, to call them the EFA tools, is that you don't have to practice anything. You don't have to meditate. You don't have to have a particular belief system, because we're looking at really at how the body-mind processes emotion and how you can, in a way, you're kind of playing with your focus of attention. And, another really good trick that, I don't think I have it in the book, but I talk about working with somebody who actually witnessed somebody fall through an atrium skylight, and he was the person in charge, so he had to deal with the horror of that. And sometimes just looking at the event or looking at yourself in that event as if you're watching it on a television screen is enough to help to neutralize some of the really strong, uncomfortable, unpleasant feelings that you have. And I'd like you to notice that I don't use the word negative feelings. I believe that all emotions are information, and they are all a natural response to events that are going on around us, whether they're interpersonal or impersonal.
So you're just saying they are, and they're actually all adaptive behaviors. Because
right.
If you're just in a state of positivity all the time, isn't that called manic?
Yes, and it's also unrealistic. You know, we believe that, we kind of have this cultural belief that life is always supposed to be happy and fun. And, of course, you know, you have these catastrophic events that are increasing in intensity, and we have these disturbing events where, they really shake us to our core, and then we think there must be something wrong with us because we're having these strong emotions that are the opposite of happy. Well, guess what? Life isn't always happy, and these strong emotions are also a sign that you're human and that you're alive and that it's normal to be disturbed by these sudden life-threatening events. And even first responders and military people and people who drive ambulances and pick up body parts for a living, even those people are disturbed by some of the things that they have to witness. And that's because they're human. That's because we're all human. And suffering is part of the human journey. And again, that goes back to humility, is understanding that even though what happens to us is deeply personal and life-changing, that what's happened to us has happened to millions of people in this earth realm going back millennia. Nobody gets out of this life without having to go through some kind of unexpected suffering.
So true. Well, I want to thank you once again for being our guest, and we're actually out of time, but it's amazing how quickly that time goes. I want everyone to know we've been speaking to Dr. Lori Nadel, award-winning author of many books. We're talking about her latest, The 5 Gifts, Discovering Hope, Healing, and Strength when Disaster Strikes. Find her at Lori Nadel. Us at naturalnurse.com. Time.